do for people, that Work the Steps to Live In It program, these are two of the best examples that I know. I also want to say both of these people are two of my closest friends, too. These two people are also huge in my recovery and in my life, and I talk to them and see them every day, and I know how they live their life today. Our first speaker is Tony H. And when Tony H. comes up here, my good friend Mason's going to come up and give him a gift, if y'all don't mind. Come on, Tony H. Yeah, we're waiting on Mason to come up and give you a gift.
Oh, stupid shirt.
It's fine.
Hey, can I turn that off? Oh. You're an idiot.
Thank you for your patience, everybody.
You knew you weren't going to get away with that sober shit for long, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Mason, I'm an addict. First of all, my man Tony P got 4 years today. This dude right here I met during H&I, he's honor of my life sponsoring this dude. He's got 2 years.
Come on, man.
I recently celebrated 7, and he brought me a shirt that said, "Happy 7 years sober as fuck," to troll me. So I figured this would be the perfect time to get payback. So here's your shirt, buddy. What's up?
As long as it's a medium. Man.
Sit down like him from behind.
Yeah. I probably don't need this microphone. Can everybody hear me? Man, my name's Tony. I'm an addict. Two suits. So, what a privilege and an honor, man, to be up here right now. Last year was my first one to come. It blows my mind that I got anything to say for a lot of people, you know. Because Narcotics Anonymous believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. And here I stand in front of all these people. I'm not nervous. I don't give a shit. You guys are my people, right? I got on a fucking shirt that says I miss prison sex. And y'all are cool with that, right? Now, if I wear this to the bank down the road, they're going to call the police on me. You know? But my people understand that, right? Man, what a privilege to be up here. Sound your phone if anyone ever made you. I can't really tell you about my lost dreams awakening without telling you a little bit about my past. That's really about the only time I ever talk about my past is when I'm doing something like this, because I just don't live like that anymore. But I wasn't the first person in my family to get high. I was born into it. Might be what's wrong with me a little bit. My mom was using old school shit, Tylenol 3s or something, when she was pregnant with me, right? My father was an alcoholic. At some point in time, whenever you was especially a young man in my house, you hit about 5 or 6, and the uncles and the dads and the biker dudes are playing poker, then somebody's going to tell you, get you a beer, boy. And that's how it all started for me, as far as substance use goes. And I did it to be cool, and I looked up to those guys. It's so crazy, the men that I looked up to in my life compared to the ones that I do now, right? There's a lot of them sitting in this room, and we say, hey, a day clean, you got the same as me, clean time don't count, and I can understand that. But the guys that I look up to that's in this room, there's several of them, the way they live their life, man, they got something that I want. And it ain't their truck, it ain't their Olay. Well, I like his truck. But some bitch is nice. But it's different, man. So at a young age, I was misled. I ain't mad at my... It's amazing what step work will do, you know? I've got to deal with all this shit from step work. Help me deal with all these things. Forgive my parents. I was mad at my parents for a long time. You did this. I played the victim role for a long time. The system took my childhood. And all these things that were eating me up, I made it through it with step work. I continue to work steps and deal with these problems. So at a young age, misguided, tried to be something I wasn't, and short story, at 14 years old, and I drove here from the greatest state in the nation, right up the road, Tennessee. So in Tennessee, and I'm sure it's different now, I don't know, I don't give a shit really, but in 1999, I was the third youngest kid in the state of Tennessee to be tried as an adult. When I was 14 years old, I committed a very violent crime, and I got 16 years in prison. So I went to juvenile for a few years, and then I went to prison. Man, all the love that's in this room, and you can feel it when you walk in here, just imagine the complete opposite of that, you know. You can feel the testosterone in those places, right? And when something bad's going to happen. Like you hear people say, you got good vibes, you got bad vibes. Man, I can understand that. I can understand that even now, because if you got that shit, I'm going to ease my way out of the conversation and probably get away from you. But that's where I was raised at. And I did 13 years on a 16-year sentence. Of course, I didn't know anything about Narcotics Anonymous then. I was taught the complete opposite of what we learn in here. Love each other, be kind to each other, compassion and friendship. And man, it's just amazing, right? But it was ingrained in my head. It was ingrained in my head, and when I got out, that's what I thought I needed, right? I just need to get out, and everything will be fine. You know, and then I just went harder. I didn't really have much of a substance use at the time I got locked up. I was young, you know. I might have seen like a titty. That's it, really. You know, I was a kid. And I didn't mean to offend nobody if you got titties. So when I got out, my mom and dad were still doing the same thing. And my mother died last year from using, and my father drank himself to death. And just for today, man, I get to break that cycle in my family. You know what I mean? Because I met you people. So I met Mason on the other side of an... Oh, yeah, it was another thing, right? So I'm on all this parole still, and I thought, man, they're fucking with me. It's the parole officer's fault, or it's the cop's fault, or whatever it is, that shit that we do, right? Well, I got off parole, and then I just started a lot of county jail time. It didn't take long at all. Come to find out, it wasn't the parole officer or the police. It was me and the shit that I was doing. Ain't that crazy? It was me. It wasn't no girl. It wasn't a job. It wasn't none of that shit. It was me. And I still didn't find that out for some time after this. So I was in one of the... I got to mention this. It's been several years ago. And I was in H&I, and there was this little... He was an older dude, smaller guy. But I had committed a few crimes with him. I'd used with him. So I knew he was with the shit. Like, I can stand up here and tell you things, and you guys can tell me things, but it's a little different when you grow up with somebody, right? And I didn't grow up with this guy. He was older than me. It was Mason's father. So I knew the guy was kind of crazy. He was my kind of guy, right? Cut you and all that kind of... I liked guys like that. It was my people. So he comes into jail one of the many times, and I'd love to say it fixed it then, but it didn't. And he starts talking about God and I just went to Narcotics Anonymous I'll be honest with you. I went to Narcotics Anonymous my first time to take my buddy some Suboxone in jail. That's what brought me to my first meeting. Because that's the only way the pods came together. You talk, do a little sign language through the window. Hey, you go to that. I got some of this. And then so that's how that happened. Well, I seen Mason's father, and at first I'm thinking nothing about that this shit works. I'm just thinking, man, he's got a good opportunity to bring the pack in, you know? He's killing it. He's killing it. But I kept going back, and it gave me that little bit of hope, man, that one of y'all, or all of y'all, got at some point in your time to where I didn't say nothing, and I wanted that tough guy persona. So I made up reasons to go, and I started paying attention, but I didn't. You know, I only paid attention in here. Now, I'd go back to the end and talk shit about them or something. Soft-ass dudes talking about steps. Whatever. So, he planted that seed for me. And I think it's amazing that several years later, my sponsor is his son. That guy waited on me to get out of jail before he went to work to take me to Cincinnati, Ohio. I didn't know them people like that, you know. He showed me the first kind of, you don't really have to be family with somebody to show them some real love and kindness. It just, I wasn't used to it, man. In my family, the only time you got any kind of love or attention was for negative behavior or somebody wanted something in return from you. I'd heard words like unconditional love and God and all these things that I've come to realize in Narcotics Anonymous, but I didn't know what none of that shit meant, man. So somebody in my family must have took me to church. I figured this out during my step work because I wasn't anti-God, but I wasn't. My biggest dream that's awakened is a relationship with God. I'll go ahead and give you the spoiler alert. That's my biggest dream so far. I've seen people that talk that shit, and I've seen some people that actually had it at one point. And there's nothing in this world that comes before the connection that I have with some he, she, it, creator, source, whatever it is. Nothing, because I finally got to a point to where I can go pray somewhere quietly. I do it often. And then if I get in a real quiet and I sit still and listen, I hear something give me an answer. That's the most important thing to me in my life right now. You know, tell some normal people that shit and they'll think you'll get a medication or something, you know. But I'm serious. So, sorry, I don't like getting emotional in front of people. So, God damn it. So somebody had took me to church or something during my family. I don't remember who it was. And we had a couch that was built like this. So it kind of set up against the wall in a little triangle. I'm good with visualizing stuff. So my dad was, it was a particularly bad night, and my dad had gotten drunk, and till the day she died, my mom wore like four scars right here. It looked like the letter C, because my dad had a full Budweiser and he was hitting her in the face with it, and it was cutting her to the bone. So I remember crawling behind that couch, because that was my little safe place, and I remember saying, Jesus, help me. Jesus, make it stop. And somebody must have took me to church, because my family wasn't church people. Well, at that point in time, at 6, 7 years old, or however old I was, nothing happened. So I built a resentment towards God. And it lasted for 30-something more years, and I didn't figure that out until I worked the steps. Working the steps with my sponsor helped me track that shit all the way back into the time and the moment to when it was. Big aha moment. Man, it must have been, this is what happened. So that's a big burden for a kid to carry, right? I got a resentment towards God at 6 years old. Man. And I carried that with me. I didn't hate him. I just didn't want to hear nothing about it. If you come around talking about God, I didn't want to hear that shit. But I did meet people in my life that felt like they just had that energy, like y'all have. You know what I mean? You get that energy off of somebody. You can't fake that shit. If I tell you I'm godly all day long and I got God and I do God and I do this shit, that shit don't matter to me. I can see in the way that you carry yourself and the way you treat people. That's what makes you a godly person, in my eyes anyway. I can talk that shit all. If that was the case, as much as you talked it, there wouldn't be preachers diddling little boys. You know what I mean? And you talk that shit all day long. Sorry if you're a preacher and you diddle a little boy. I didn't mean to offend you. So I wanted that when I come in Narcotics Anonymous, man. I had the only God I had in my life when I finally come into the basement in my hometown was a gift of desperation. It's the only God I had. I used the meetings for my higher power for about 6 months, and I worked and I paid attention. And when they tell you get in there and find some people that's living the program and stick to them and make them like you, that's what I did. Some of those guys are in here. There's a lot of those guys in here. And I watched the way that they carried themselves outside of meetings. I didn't care if they could quote the basic text, because that ain't me. I'm like, and at first I thought I had to do that. I'm like, fuck, I'm a hillbilly. I'm not going to be able to do all that. I got a buddy, Chase, and he's real poetic with Narcotics Anonymous, right? And then it was people like I would never hang around with. The same guy I was just talking about, right? I'm like, this dude's a fuckboy. I'm not going to hang out with this guy. He's not covered in tattoos. He's not been to the penitentiary, so he don't know what pain is. Until I heard him speak, and people that's never done a day in jail got the same fucking pain that I got, the same loneliness that I got, the same disease that I got, the same problems I got, and they're in the solution, you know? And I wanted to get there, so I stopped finding the the differences between people. And I slowly started to open up. And I'm still not really the best at that. I got a pretty tight circle in my home group. There's another home group in my town. They're all right. I go there sometimes. I actually thought this is their shirt. I would have wore mine, but I thought this was an Out of the Darkness shirt. It's the only reason I put it on. Oh, not this one. This one. I forgot I had a shirt on that said I miss prison sex. Man, I got to take this motherfucker off. So I met Mason, like he said, and I was on the other side of an H&I meeting. If any of y'all in here are involved in H&I, man, keep it up. I'm the result of H&I. Anytime that somebody calls me to do H&I, unless there's, you know, I'm putting off other shit that I got going on to do that, because that's what got me where I'm standing here today. It's crazy. 2 years, that's it. I mean, it probably helps that I know somebody who's running this shit, but still, you know? I'm just being honest. I'm supposed to be honest, right? I might have slid him a 20 or something like that. You know? So I walked into the basement, man, and I didn't know what Narcotics Anonymous was. The only perspective that I had on any type of 12-step recovery is shit that I seen on TV, just being honest, and it was fucking depressing. I'd see some people in a chair smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, talking about how depressed they were, and I'm like, man, I don't want to do that. That seems horrible, right? But I tried everything else, you know? This is what I knew how to do my whole life. I'm sure some of y'all will be familiar with this. I knew how to get incarcerated, tell my old lady to bring me some e-cigs, put them on the books, right? And then I don't smoke cigarettes, so I'm going to double those up on the weekend. And then while the dope's coming out of my system, I'm going to watch everybody in there. And the guy that's on the phone all the time, with, hey, baby, send me some money on your books, I'm going to get him on the poker table and I'm going to wax his ass. And I'm going to make him like it, right? And then by 2-3 weeks that's went on, I got my hygiene built up. I'm 2-for-1 and shit. Now I'm doing push-ups again, and I'm right back to being the fucking honey bun guy. You know what I mean? Some of y'all know the honey bun guy in jail. And that's what I knew how to do. I didn't know how to keep a phone number for 6 months. I didn't know how to pay my bills. I didn't know how to show up for my family. I didn't know how to have car insurance. Man, 4 months of being unincarcerated, my family was doing this. It's about that time. And they were right for a long time. Until I went into the rooms and I sat down and I shut the fuck up and I paid attention. And I let somebody love me, which I did not know what that was, until I could love myself. I'm really good at outward fake confidence. I go to the penitentiary, get some muscles, some tattoos, and be like, hey, man, everything's good. And that whole time I was a scared little bitty boy. A little bitty scared boy that put on so many masks in his life and painted himself up to look like something. I realize I look like a cartoon character. I don't give a fuck at this point. But I let some people love me, man. I come in my basement, and they still, some guys in there joke about it that are still around, and they would try to hug, like, I mean, a grown-ass man. Put his arms around me, not like, hey, what's up? Put his arms around me and be this close to my face and say, I love you, brother. I'm like, man, get the fuck off me, dude. You know? But I slowly started being receptive to that shit. And you can ask anybody in my home group, man. I've hugged 50 people since I've been here. I understand it now. And it blew my mind. I'm like, hey, you don't know me. You don't know me. So you want something or trying to fuck? What's going on? It was just completely alien to me. And the more that I hung around Narcotics, look, man, this is my church. My basic text says Tony's Bible on the front of it. That's just my thing, right? This is my church. When I see people get excited and do all kind of, I'm going to bring rattlesnakes to an NA meeting and see what happens. Huh? Hell yeah. Man, I started hanging around. I started paying attention. I let people start loving on me. And I slowly started working steps. I took my time with my steps. I called my sponsor. I did all these things that was suggested of me that I didn't think would work. 4 and 5 didn't scare me. By the time I got to 3, I had plenty of evidence in my life that this shit worked. And I was on fire for recovery. I used to hear people say, I don't see him. I've been looking for him. Where's Ryan? Okay. Until I met that guy, I used to hear people say early in recovery, you're on this pink cloud. And then you guys start doing like, well, I met this old fucking grumpy man. at a sponsorship retreat named Ryan. Some of y'all probably know him. He's a dirty old man. And every time I ask a question about some history, this motherfucker started calling me. I started sending him dick pics, not mine. You know, old guys don't. Hey, look, old guys don't. They don't like that shit. The younger generation plays that gay shit. Them old dudes don't like that shit. It makes him, he cusses me out, son. But we slowly become friends, and every opportunity he's got something to teach me about Narcotics Anonymous, he'll take the time and sit down and do it, man. I fucking love that guy. 30-something years clean, he's still on the pink cloud. So it doesn't have to go away. I'm not letting my shit go away. I'm not. If somebody else says that, around pink cloud, well, that's your fucking business. You know? Work harder. I don't know what else to tell you, right? Man, I'm on the pink cloud. I'm standing here talking to you motherfuckers. This blows my mind, dude. It's amazing. I'm hyped up. I snuck my bulldog in. Fucking good to go. You know? Fucking good to go, man. Last year, this convention was the first one that I came to like this. I've been to some events. And I talked about it so much and was so giddy over it. My sponsor called me and interviewed me on this little podcast thing. You ever realize how country you are until you're on tape? I was like, that ain't me. I sound like a cousin fucker. You know what I mean? No offense if you're a cousin fucker. Yeah. But so he calls me and interviews me, and I'm all hyped up. And man, when we did the circle in here on the weekends, or even now, really, man, I felt like I was in the presence of God, if that makes any sense. Yes. There's a couple things that go on here. All of it's great, to where I get goosebumps, and if I had any hair on the back of my neck, it would stand up. I just get those tinglies and that shit that I was looking for my whole life, you know? That's what I was looking for. I was looking for my people. When I was a kid, I grew up real poor in the trailer park. All my trailer park buddies, their mom and dads did the same shit that mine did, right? So until I hit 6 or 7, I can remember this, and I started playing sports. Well, then I was pretty good at sports. So now the kids with Nike shoes and didn't shop at Walmart and all that kind of shit, they wanted to hang out with me some. So I felt torn then. Hey, where do I fit in at? And ever since then, I was looking for where I fit in at until I found you people. You know? Man, I found you guys. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. I got a normal personal life at home. Man, them fucking people don't get it. Hey, you know, nothing against them being normal or whatever you want to call it, normal, but they just don't get it. Gratitude and starting your day off with gratitude and talking to each other. I'm sure a lot of people in my personal life, they're just like, hey man, why you go to all them meetings? We all just, like, we just see each other and drugs are bad, okay? And that's it, you know? I'm like, come check it out. I brought some normies to the meeting. Like, come fucking check it out, bro. You ain't got to be, we'll make you an honorary junkie, baby. Come on down. You know? And it's just a huge part of my life, man. I'll get to some more of the dream stuff and I'll shut up. Give me the signal if you need me to, you know. So I stayed in a prison cell for a huge chunk of my life. I got involved in shit in there that I shouldn't have got involved in. Made the whole shit worse, more violent. I was young. I was very impressionable. So I went down that route. I was full of anger, hatred. And when I got involved in Narcotics Anonymous and stuck around, instead of doing what I normally do and take a suggestion from somebody else, I'll never forget my sponsor telling me outside the meeting hall when I asked him to be my sponsor. He said, if you do this, it'll be the best decision you've ever made for yourself. And I didn't really know what that was, because I always made decisions based on what's better for other people. What's good for the kids, what's good for the old lady, what's good for you, what can I do to make you like me, right? And I did this for myself. And at 37 years old, God called me to work at a treatment facility. I've never been to treatment. My treatment is handcuffs, dark hole, don't get high no more. That's how I've always come off of drugs. So when I was doing H&I, or when I was on the other side of H&I, there's a guy that come in that's here, Matt, and talked, and he said something about being, this is crazy, he said something about being a substance abuse counselor. And I remember praying the whole last time I had to do a 2, 7 months, 14 days. Probably somebody's familiar with that. I got out, and the whole time I prayed while I was in there, I said, man, let me get this little job at Buffalo Valley. You know, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to try to do this thing. I'm really going to try. And I prayed for that shit every night. It wasn't a lot of money. And I stuck with it, and I got the job there. Well, I remember him coming in and talking about being a son. I was like, man, that shit sounds cool. You get your name on the door. You get to help people. And the crazy thing is I never, all my whole life, I always wondered, maybe some of y'all can relate to this, man, why are you doing this? From the time I was a kid, what's going on? What is all this for? You know, why me? Not just the victim role, but I had some crazy shit happen to me, man. You know, I'd get a leg up and then get them cut out from under me. And I'm like, man, even when I tried to do the right thing, why all this pain? Why all this pain? And at 37, 38 years old, God showed me why he gave me all that pain. So I can relate to other addicts. Man, if I had the money, I'd do my job for free. I'm serious. I get in trouble all the time for spending more time with clients than I do paperwork. All the time. I'm good if you want to cut. Man. And it ain't me doing it. I get in trouble for talking about NA because it's not an NA program. They're like, say 12-step recovery. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'll do what I got to do to get by, you know? And sometimes those people, I've got the best compliments I've ever got in my life from strangers. Same shit I was talking about seeing in some of the men in this room and in my home group. I've had a man that I've known for 7 or 8 days come in my office and tell me, Mr. Tony, whatever it is you got, man, I want that. Woo! I got to kick him out and cry. You know? I got to get him up out of there and shut my door and cry. Man, I got my mother's ashes on my desk at work. And I kiss them when I come in the morning. And I kiss. See, my mom died so I can be standing here right now. My father died so I could be standing here right now. My sister died to this disease so I could be standing here. And when I get down from here, I got that seat over there. All three of those people that I know personally paid with their life so I could get clean and stand here. That's what all that pain was for. That's why all that shit happened. I am not poking God in the eye anymore. You know, I try to pay attention. I don't listen to people that I care about in my life, some of these men, and wait till just so I can say something back. You know? If you got one of those people in your life that you look up to, in your recovery group, your home group, whatever it is, man, listen. That's the only thing I knew to do. I was stubborn as hell. But man, listening got me to where I'm at right now. If my sponsor would have told me to go out by that bush, do a butt-naked handstand at 9 o'clock in the morning, I'd have went to jail, but I was going to try to do it. You know, hey, man, it's such a privilege to be here and an honor. Thanks for listening to my shit. I know everybody out there's got a story. Thanks for listening to mine. I love each and every one of you, and I hope I get to know you.
Right on, man.
And I love prison sex.
Hey everybody, our next speaker on the workshop, Lost Dreams Awaken, one of my best friends, my business partner, and he's from Hohenwald, Tennessee also, just like Tony is. Most people know him as Robbie Hustle. Let's give him a hand.
Alright, I'm probably gonna need this microphone. I get a little soft spoken sometimes. Man, I just got to pray for a minute. Y'all give me a minute. Hi, I'm Robbie. I'm an addict.
Robbie!
Man, I told my wife before we come up here, I said, man, I really want to find my shirt because, the 24th convention was my first one. This is my fourth one coming here. That was my first convention. And, man, this shirt's special to me because I had like 90 days clean here. And anybody that's known me since I come in this thing, it was really uncomfortable for me. I was just a really uncomfortable person. I stayed up there in my room most of the time. Didn't really want to come down here until it's time to eat something, really. And now, sitting up here now, if you'd have told me then, like, man, 3 years later, you'd be up here speaking at this convention, man, I'd told you you're high. Like, you know what I mean? I just can't even wrap my mind around it right now. It's so surreal. And, man, it's just an honor to be up here and speak. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about my backstory. I'm going to try to tie it back in with my dreams and everything that's going on. But, man, I'll just get into it. I had a pretty normal childhood first 10 years of my life. I had a man that was in my life that really taught me how to be a man. He was kind of a model image of what I thought. He worked all the time. He was a great guy. And then my life got broken apart, you know, and they got divorced and found out he wasn't my dad. And life went crazy all of a sudden. And, you know, my mom was a bad alcoholic, and there was just man after man after man after man. It's a lot of abuse with my mother, me, my brother, and that's just how life turned out. And I left home at a real young age, and always just had to work for a living and make my own way. And I just kind of slid through the cracks and left home, kind of never looked back. And I always hated anybody that drank or used drugs or any of that. I always said I never wanted to be nothing like them. I would never do it. And I stuck to that for a while. I went all through my teenage years working. Wound up meeting, at the time, the love of my life, you know. She got pregnant. We wound up getting married at a young age. Since she turned 18, I started my life, got us a house. I thought, man, I really got life figured out, you know. And at the time, I didn't realize it. Now, looking back, I do. Like, I think this disease was in me the whole time of addiction, and it just took that one time to just activate it, and it took off. And it started out with just a casual beer at a bar, and just from that point in my life, in my early 20s, I completely destroyed my marriage, went in and out of jail, ruined so many jobs I can't count, burned every bridge that I had. From my early 20s to the age of about 36, that's all I did was use. And the whole progression of it, I had a real bad problem about comparing myself. Like, I would just say, well, I just drank and go to the bars. I ain't as bad as this guy over here doing all this dope, you know. And I ain't as bad as this guy. But by the time I was 36 years old, I had to progress from all them phases, and wound up strung out on the streets. My mother done died. She was the last real, like, person I had in my life I could turn to. And I wound up being that guy on the street that I used to say I'd never be, you know, the guy that was homeless, flying a sign at the interstate, and just living on the streets. And it eventually broke me bad enough where this lady was kind enough to help me out on the streets and got me into treatment. And I came to Little Old Hole in Wall from Nashville. And that's really where my life started to change, because I just didn't have nothing left in me. I was completely broken. I was there for a little while, and man, it seemed harmless to me. Like, they give me medicine to sleep on. It's like, this shit ain't narcotics. I mean, I traded for cigarettes. I needed cigarettes to smoke. I didn't see the harm in it at the time, but they did, and they kicked me back out, and I got dropped back off in Nashville. So, I mean, I did what I knew to do, and man, I went back getting high. And, you know, I had a couple overdoses in, and still to this day, I don't know how they found me down there at that abandoned car wash at Yen Lane and Dickerson Road. Man, I was homeless, like, and I still don't know who found me or how they found me, but I see it's all God now, you know. But I wound up staying out there for 30-something days, came back to Hole in the Wall, went to treatment, and man, that's really where my life changed. Mason back there is a big part of my recovery, my story. He, you know, it was over a peer program. That's where I got to stay when I got out of treatment, and it's an extended program, and that's really the whole where it all started for me. If it wasn't for that program and being in that program and being in recovery, I call it in that bubble, I guess, for first 6-7 months of my recovery, I don't think I'd be where I'm at today. And I got involved, man, got a sponsor. Chase Fair is my sponsor. He's somebody else that I look up to, how he lives his life, his relationship with his wife. It's I got involved, started working steps. That's really where all my life, where the changes started happening for me. I was able to forgive a lot of them people and things that were done to me in my past and see that they were just addicts just like I am. And I want to read y'all something that I got. Man, this was on my fourth step, and I was digging through it the other day, and I worked it out of the back to the basics the first time, and it says in the fourth step, there's a dream section in the personal inventory, and it said some of us addicts have lost our ability to dream, and it said, what are some of my dreams today? And I was looking back at what I wrote at I think I had 6 or 7 months clean at the time, and it said, it was kind of hard to read my writing because my handwriting sucks. And looking back on it this long, it looked like some little toddler scribbled on it, but that's just how I write, you know. And just what I wrote, it said, I want to finish the steps and one day be able to sponsor another addict and help someone to live clean also. Find a woman to spend the rest of my life with and get married. Get a relationship back with my kids. Buy a house, build an old antique car, and work for myself. And just live happy with what I have. And reading back on this, man, made me kind of making me emotional now. But man, I'm looking back now, you know, Mo and Tony know me better than probably, they probably know me better than my sponsors. You know, we all got a place early on and lived together. And they heard it all the time. I'd say, man, I really want to get in a relationship, man. I really want to get in a relationship. And like it would never happen. I'd see all these other people getting relationships. And I was like, man, I'm doing the right thing. I feel like I'm living right, doing right. Like, when's it going to happen for me? And then I used to have these moments where I'd say, well, that just ain't fucking never going to happen for me. I'm just going to be by myself the rest of my life, you know, this whole pity party shit. And, man, I just see now how everything's worked out. It was all on God's timing. Man, my wife's right there against the wall in the back. And, man, me and her had such a wonderful relationship and connection. And, man, it's just a real big God thing. I see also how God puts people in our lives, like me and Tony meeting up, and we share the same passions and dreams and goals, and was able to go into business together. And I've always worked and did side work when I could keep my shit together, and always did little jobs. But I never thought it would turn into something like this and be working for ourselves, and I'd be able to achieve these goals that we're achieving. And I'm not trying to sound like boastful. I'm just trying to like let y'all know that anything's possible in recovery in such a short time. Like, man, I've been able to buy some property, start building our house. Man, I've been just accomplishing all these goals, but I just see it, you know, it was all on God's time. You know, God knew all along this was going to happen. It was going to come to the whole wall and how this was going to work and get involved and introduced to NA. Because, you know, God, my understanding, you know, He is the program. He's all in the program. You know, this program brought me closer to Him. And, man, I'm getting lost words now. I believe early on, if I'd, might as well. God, I love y'all.
Hey, I want to thank both of our speakers for doing the workshop this afternoon. Thank you for your service. You know, this is a convention, so instead of just saying the serenity prayer, let's please circle up and say the serenity prayer, all right?